Laura Blumenfeld's father was a tourist in Jerusalem when he was shot in the head. The shooter was a member of the PLO. He had lousy aim. His victim lived. But Laura Blumenfeld never forgot that day. In fact, she vowed to find the man responsible and take revenge. Blumenfeld kept her word, and she wrote about it in Revenge, A Story of Hope. She told Steve Paulson what happened when she went to Jerusalem and tracked down the shooter's family.
There were two competing impulses all the way through. Part of me was just that visceral rage. Somebody hurt a member of my family, whether it's a parent or a child or a sibling. You just want to grab him and shake him and smack him around a little bit and scream, you know, do you understand what it is that you tried to do? The other side of me had a different kind of goal. It was to shake him up, but shake him up from the inside, to somehow reach inside of this person and try to turn him upside down. And it was an outsized goal. It was naive and definitely elusive, but I wanted to make him realize that he was wrong.
And you actually went to Israel to track down this person. How did you go about trying to find him and his family?
Well, it took about 6 months to find the actual gunman. I dug around in police records and in newspaper archives, and I found that there had been a list of suspects rounded up for this series of shootings. And I went down the names one by one. I ticked through them. I didn't have phone numbers or street addresses, but I did have names. And so I would travel north of Jerusalem on the road to Ramallah and get off the bus and basically ask locals, where is this family, where is that family, and knock on doors.
And eventually you found the right door?
Eventually the right door opened, and it was the gunman's mother who invited me in and offered me some cold orange soda to drink. She said to me that her son had tried to kill a man, and I asked who. And her grandson, who was sitting next to me on the couch, shrugged and sort of smiled, this sort of commiserating smile, and said, some Jew. And there was a little bit of a titter in the room, and more and more family members came out to tell me the story, how there had been an American tourist walking through the market, and their son had shot him in the head. They described it as an effort at public relations. They said that it was a way to get people to pay attention to them, and there was nothing personal about it.
What was it like as you were getting to know this Palestinian family and the relatives of the man who shot your father?
It was always very tense. I always worried that they were going to discover who I am. They were not a family who simply had strong political beliefs, but they had acted on them through violence. The living room was decorated with portraits of the sons with various militia leaders and guerrilla leaders. It was very tense, although I have to say that they were nice people, other than the fact that they wanted my father dead. They really welcomed me into their lives. At one point, one of the daughters was pregnant, and they were talking about baby names. And they said, well, you know, if it's a boy, we'll name him after Grandpa. And if it's a girl, let's name her Laura. And of course, I sat there with my face feeling very hot and red and conflustered. And I think at first they thought I didn't understand the Arabic, but I understood very well. I just was flabbergasted that here I was doing something really to stand up for my family. And revenge really is often a way to assert your collective identity. Who are you? You are what you avenge. And I was there to avenge the Blumenfelds, and somehow I'd become a member of the Khatib family, this Palestinian family.
Now, the remarkable part of this story is that you actually developed a correspondence with the guy who shot your father, this man, Omar Khatib. What kinds of things did you say?
Well, I was very open and not challenging at all in my letters. My goal was really to try to get to know him and make him feel comfortable and trust me and relax and open up. So I asked him the most general types of questions, like, tell me about your life before prison and tell me about your dreams for your after you're released. And, oh, by the way, what happened in that alley back in 1986? Who did you shoot and why? His replies at first were really just page after page of ideological rhetoric. When my husband read the letter, he said it sounds like a stereotypical crazed terrorist espousing ideology. They were quite disappointing, although over time he did start to open up. The first time he referred to the shooting, he said that he was firing at a, quote, chosen military target, which made me think of like a radar station or something. I couldn't even figure out how that was a person that he was talking about. But in time, he gave me some details of his childhood, how he had hid under his bed. His mother hid all the children under their beds during the 1967 war with Israel, and that he remembers hearing the footfalls of the soldiers and the firing and how frightened he was.
So here you were. You had established this camaraderie with his family. You had developed this correspondence with him that went on for months and months. And then it all came to a head at a hearing in court to decide whether Omar Khatib should be let out of prison. What happened that day? And you were there.
This was my one opportunity to meet him. I was finally going to come face to face with this man I had been tracking for over a year. He was appearing at a hearing, a medical hearing, because he suffered from asthma and he was trying to be released on medical grounds. I wasn't really sure what I would do, but I did know that I was going to explain to him who I really was. And this idea of transformation, which I had heard about, which is you perform some kind of impossibly optimistic act, something, some kind of act of generosity for your enemy in the hopes that you can transform him into something else. At the last minute, I decided that maybe this was the way I was going to go. I think in all of our lives, there's this like choice you have to make. Are you going to be open and vulnerable and available to the world, or are you going to take the other route, which means that you're closed and also quick to lash back and defensive?
So what did you do?
I stood up in front of the courtroom. It took a while, actually, to get permission to speak. And they said to me, it's okay, you know, you're a young girl, you're from America, you can speak in English. But I said I'd like to speak in Hebrew because I knew that the family who was in the courtroom, Omar and Omar's family, understood Hebrew, that they wouldn't understand my English. At that point, though, they got very concerned because I didn't know Hebrew, according to them. And the fact that I knew Hebrew was shocking. And Omar stood up and said, what's happening here? This American journalist is not who she had appeared to be. Then he sat down and I started to speak. I said, my name is Laura. I come from the United States and I don't know all the facts of this case, but I've gotten to know Omar's family and also Omar, and I do believe that he's sorry for what he did. Most important, I don't think he would repeat his violent acts again, because that was something that I had asked him in a letter, whether he would ever do that again. That was very important for my father. I said that I had spoken with the victim, David Blumenfeld, who believes that if he's truly ill and if he won't hurt anybody again, 12 years of prison is enough, and he should be able to go home. At that point, the judges cut me off because they said I have no right to speak on behalf of the victim. Who am I? And the defense attorney, it was unclear where this was going, but the prosecutor was seething, and she was saying, you know, this is classic hearsay, this is inadmissible, and there was quite a storm in the courtroom. They wouldn't let me talk, although I talked over them, and I said, I do have a right to speak on his behalf, I do, and they said, well, why? And finally I said, in Hebrew, I said, I am his daughter. And I heard a woman crying behind me. I believe it was Omar's sister. And then just there was all this sobbing and crying in the courtroom. And the judge said to me, well, how long did you keep this up for? And I said, for a year. And he said, well, why did you do something so dangerous? What on earth were you doing? And finally, I felt really happy that I could explain to somebody what I was doing and share this secret. I said I wanted them to know me as an individual, not as a victim, not as a Jew, just simply as Laura. And I really wanted them to understand that this is not a conflict between disembodied Jews and Arabs, but that we're people with families. I love my father, we come from a good family, and we're not military targets, and you can't just kill us. And at that point, I turned around and faced Omar for the first time. We locked eyes. I said to him, listen, you promised me, this is on your honor, that you would never hurt anybody again. This is an agreement now, a pact between the Blumenfeld family and the Khatibs. And he didn't say anything. He just sat there flabbergasted.
How did Omar react to all of this?
Later, he wrote me and my father some letters. The letter he wrote to me said that he hadn't slept for days after the hearing, that he was trying to reassemble the whole puzzle in his mind and make sense of what had happened. He said to me, you made me feel so stupid that I ever caused you and your kind mother pain. Sorry, and please understand. And more important, he wrote my father a letter where he said, Dear David, 13 years have passed, and I know it's a little late to ask you how are your injuries. But then he went on to say, Laura was the mirror that made me see your face as a human person, deserved to be admired and respected. Sorry I didn't understand her message from the beginning. And that was my revenge. It was sweet revenge because when he pulled the trigger on my father, I felt like he had denied his humanity, my father's humanity, and my revenge was restoring that humanity. He was ashamed of what he had done, and more important, he came to recognize my father as the man, as the father.
And we should mention that in spite of your plea for his release, the Israeli authorities kept him locked up.
That's right. And he was able, though, to send a videotaped message to my father where he, you know, apologized to him and said that he understands now that violence is not the way and that he's going to pursue a different path in his life. Somebody asked him also, they said to him, you know, the name of Laura's book is Revenge. And he sort of smiled and he said, well, she got revenge on me, although she got a constructive kind of revenge.
Laura Blumenfeld is the author of Revenge, A Story of Hope. She spoke with Steve Paulson.